All right, so today we're going super deep on this guy, Laszlo Tarr.
Okay.
He's this Hungarian-American artist, and looking at all the stuff he sent over, it looks like he had like a crazy long life.
Yeah, almost a whole century.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, going through some pretty major historical events too.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, fleeing communist Hungary, that's not something everyone goes through.
Not at all.
So we've got a lot to work with here. You sent over his whole online art gallery, which is run by his son Julius, and then also a bunch of excerpts from two books by Julius, Cherry Picked and The Moon and the Star.
That's right.
I have to say, though, the gallery is super impressive.
Oh, it is.
It's really nicely put together.
Yeah, Julius did a great job putting it all together, and it really shows you how talented Laszlo was.
Yeah, so I guess our mission for this deep dive should be to try and figure out, like, what made this guy tick, you
Like
know?
what drove him, what were his big influences?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he was producing art for like over 90 years.
It's pretty unbelievable when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's like more than most people's entire lifetimes.
Exactly.
Starting at age 5 with drawing, and then up to his death in 2019, he was doing watercolors, oils, drawings, woodcuts, like everything.
It's really amazing. And from what I saw online and read in the books, a lot of his work is like about people and life, especially in New York City. He really captures that whole vibe, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think that's what makes this deep dive so cool. We've got the gallery showing us all his art and how his style changed over time.
Right.
But then we've also got these books giving us all the juicy personal
Oh,
details.
yeah, for sure. I mean, Cherry Picked is all about his childhood and how he got into art in the first place. And then The Moon and the Star goes into their escape from Hungary, like their whole journey.
Yeah, it's wild.
And it all ties together. You know, the
Yeah.
gallery shows you what he created, and the books show you where it all came from. All that life experience feeding into his art.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're getting the full picture, you know?
Yeah.
You're not just seeing the art in a vacuum. It's like you're getting to know the artist too.
Yeah. And I think that's what's really going to help our listeners, like, get it, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah, I mean, instead of just throwing a bunch of facts at them, it's more like we're telling a story, you know?
Right.
And hopefully they come away with a better understanding of who Laszlo Tarr was and like what his art was all about.
Yeah, exactly. A more complete picture.
So let's get into it. Where should we start? I guess with the beginning,
Yeah,
right?
let's go back to the very beginning.
Okay, so Laszlo Tarr, born in Eastern Hungary in 1922, and he starts drawing when he's 5 years old, like right out the gate.
That's what it says in Cherry Picked. 5 years old, 1927.
That's crazy. And they actually talk about his first real drawing. It was of their family dog whistle.
Oh, yeah, on like a warm July morning, just a little kid drawing his dog.
It's such a cute image. I mean, and I feel like drawing is such a pure form of art, you know?
Totally, like just a pencil and some paper, that's all you need.
Yeah, and for a 5-year-old to be so drawn to that it says something, you know?
Yeah, it does. Like there was something in him that just wanted to create.
But what's interesting is that his dad was a school teacher, right?
Yeah.
And apparently he wanted Laszlo to do something more practical.
Yeah, like engineering or teaching something more stable.
Oh, yeah, of course, the classic artist versus parent struggle.
Right.
So was there like a big fight about that, or did they come around to the idea of him being an artist?
It doesn't sound like there was a huge blow up or anything from the books, but it does seem like they kind of hoped he'd choose a different path at first.
Right.
But, you know, they must have seen how talented he was. There's a part where they're talking about his drawings with such pride, you know?
Oh, that's cute. So they warmed up to it eventually.
Yeah, they definitely did.
So then how does he actually get into like formal art training?
Well, first he goes to this Free School of Fine Arts in Nyíregyháza,
Okay.
but then the big one is the Budapest Royal Academy of Fine Art. He's there from 1943 to 1948.
Wow.
And it's during World War II, so things are really tense.
Yeah, that must have been a crazy time.
It was, but get this, his instructor there, this guy, Soini István, he actually uses Laszlo's art to keep him out of the war.
What? How did he do
Well, he
that?
basically uses his position to argue that Laszlo's too valuable as an artist that he shouldn't be sent to fight.
Wow. So even in the middle of a war, art was still seen as important.
Yeah, and that says a lot about how respected Soini István was, too.
Yeah, he must have had some pull to get away with that.
Oh, for sure.
So then after the war, he goes to Italy, right?
Yeah, in 1946, he gets this amazing opportunity. He becomes an apprentice to Giorgio Morandi in Bologna.
Wow, Giorgio Morandi, that's a big deal.
Huge.
I mean, that guy's work is in museums all over the world.
Right.
So what do you think he learned from him?
I mean, Morandi was known for his still lifes, so I'm sure Laszlo picked up a lot about composition and light and shadow.
Yeah, and just being exposed to a different artistic tradition, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Italian art is so different from Hungarian art, so that must have really broadened his perspective.
So he comes back to Hungary and he gets married to Olga in 1948.
Yeah, things are really starting to come together for him. He's got his wife, he's got his art.
But then communist Hungary happens,
Yeah.
and it doesn't sound like it was a good time for them.
Not at all. I mean, in The Moon and the Star, Julius talks about how oppressive the regime was.
Yeah, and they actually took away his dad's property in 1955.
His dad was a school headmaster, you know?
Wow, and they just took it.
Yeah, the Communist Party decided they were too rich, so they just took everything.
That's insane. So I guess it's no wonder they decided to leave.
No, not at all. I mean, can you imagine your whole life's work being taken away from you like that?
That's like your livelihood gone just like that.
Exactly.
So tell me about the escape. That's like a whole movie in itself.
It is. It's actually insane. So it's October 1956. They leave their home in Budakeszi in the middle of the night.
And they have their two kids with them, right?
Yeah, Julia and baby Leslie.
So scary, I can't even imagine.
And they're walking through the forest trying to get to the Austrian border, and all of a sudden, a flare goes up.
Oh, God.
They're terrified. They think they've been caught.
I bet.
But they keep going. And eventually they make it to the border, and there are soldiers there with red crosses. They're the ones who helped them cross over.
Wow, so they made it.
They did.
What a
I
story.
know, right out of a movie.
So they get to America, and I guess they end up in New York.
Yeah, well, first they're at Camp Kilmer in New Jersey.
Oh, right.
The American Red Cross helps them get settled.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then in 1960, they finally make it to New York City.
So what's it like for him as an artist now in America?
Well, I mean, it's a whole new world, right? New country, new language, new everything.
Yeah, totally. How do you even start over after something like that?
Right. But he doesn't give up on his art. He keeps painting, drawing, doing woodcuts.
He doesn't let it stop him.
No. He even starts working in the textile industry to support his family. But he never stops creating.
Wow, that's dedication.
It is. And he keeps learning too. In the 1970s, he studies with Raphael Sawyer at the New School.
Raphael Sawyer, another big name.
Yeah, he was a major American artist.
So he's still getting formal training even after everything he's been through.
Exactly. He never stops learning. And he's not just studying, he's also putting himself out there. He starts doing shows in Washington Square Park and on Long Island.
That's so cool. So he's really becoming a part of the American art scene.
Yeah, he is. And then in 1977 and 1995, he goes back to Europe.
Oh, wow. So he goes back to his roots.
Yeah, he travels to England, France, Italy, Holland, all over.
I bet that was really inspiring for him.
Oh, definitely. Seeing those familiar places, experiencing those different cultures, it must have had a huge impact on his work.
And then after all those years away, he finally gets to go back to Hungary.
Yeah, in 1989, he has a big four-person show in Budapest. And then in 1991, he has a bunch of one-man shows there too.
It's like he's finally being recognized in his home country.
Yeah, it's like a homecoming after all those years.
I wonder what that must have felt like.
I can only imagine.
And get this, his life and work actually became the subject of a Hungarian short novel. Yeah, it's called En meg látom a kikötőt, which I think means I still saw the harbor.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so he's really made a name for himself both in America and in Hungary.
That's pretty remarkable.
Okay, so then his son Julius comes into the picture, right?
Yeah, Julius starts working with his dad's art in 1983, and then in 1993, he founds TS Publishing.
And that's the company behind the online gallery, right?
Yeah, Julius is the one who brought his dad's art online.
That's really smart, especially for back then.
Oh, yeah, he was ahead of his time.
It's so cool that he saw the potential of the internet for sharing art with the world.
Yeah, and he doesn't stop there. He also starts making limited edition prints of his dad's work.
So he's making it more accessible to people.
Exactly.
And they actually go on a painting trip together to Venice.
Yeah, 1995, they spend 12 days there, and Laszlo creates 36 watercolors.
That's like three paintings a day.
I know, it's insane.
He must have been so inspired by Venice.
Oh, definitely. And I think being there with Julius probably helped too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that father-son bond must have been so strong.
Definitely.
And his work starts getting picked up by some big companies too, right?
Yeah, General Electric uses his art for some of their stuff, and Simon and Schuster uses it for some of their book covers.
Wow. So he's getting mainstream recognition now.
He is, and he also gets invited to exhibit his work at the Hungarian consulate in New York in 2000.
Wow, that must have been a huge honor.
Oh, definitely. I mean, to be recognized by your home country like that after everything he went through.
Yeah, that's really special.
And he keeps exhibiting his work in the US too. He has a show at the Huntington Arts Council in 2001.
So he's still going strong.
Yeah, and then in 2008, his wife Olga passes away.
Oh, that's so sad.
It is. But he moves in with Julius on Long Island, and he actually keeps creating art until 2017.
That's amazing.
I know, he was in his 90s by then.
And he finally passed away in 2019 at the age of 97. His final piece was finished just the year before.
Yeah. What a life.
I know. So much happened to him. So much change. So much creativity.
It's really inspiring.
So now that we have a better sense of his life, let's talk about his art itself.
Okay.
Like, what would you say are the main things that define his style?
Well, first of all, he was incredibly skilled across a lot of different mediums, especially on paper.
Yeah, I mean, we saw watercolors, oils, drawings, woodcuts.
Exactly. He was a master of all of them.
And like we said before, a lot of his work is about life in New York City.
Yeah, he really captures that energy.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. And the gallery describes his landscapes, India, ink drawings, and woodcuts as having this unique, nostalgic, and deeply expressive perspective on metropolitan life.
Yeah, it's like he's showing you the city through his eyes.
Exactly. And it's not just the cityscapes. He also did a ton of flower paintings.
Oh, yeah. So many. And they're beautiful. So vibrant.
Totally. And the gallery says they're incredibly decorative and vividly colorful.
Yeah, he really had a way with color.
Yeah. And his paintings of Europe and Long Island are just breathtaking.
Oh, yeah. They're amazing.
It's like he could capture the essence of any place he painted.
Yeah, he really had a gift for capturing the mood of a place through his use of color and composition.
And then there are the India ink and oil pastel drawings and the woodcuts.
Yeah, those are really interesting. They're very detailed, very focused on social settings.
The gallery talks about a profound sense of personal involvement in those pieces.
Yeah, like he's not just observing, he's really engaging with the scene.
Yeah, totally. And I think that speaks to his overall artistic philosophy.
Right. He was always striving for perfect expression.
The gallery actually uses those words.
Yeah. And he wasn't afraid to experiment either. He used so many different techniques and media throughout his career.
It's like he was always pushing himself to try new things.
Yeah. He had this burning desire to explore the broadest possible range of expression.
But even with all that experimentation, there's this consistency to his work, you know?
Yeah, he always came back to the same core ideals.
Exactly. And even though he lived in America for so long, his style still had this distinctly European flavor.
Yeah, it's like his experiences in both worlds combined to create this unique artistic voice.
And the gallery says he had this rich and painterly palette that is uniquely his own.
Yeah, it's true. His work is immediately recognizable.
And even though his scenes are often very realistic, there's something about them that draws you in, you know?
Yeah, they invite you to connect with that original inspiring moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're seeing the world through his eyes.
And the gallery really emphasizes that his work reflects this profound interpretation of his emotions and life spirit combined with the world he experienced.
It's like his art was a way for him to process everything that happened to him.
Yeah, and to share it with the world.
And they describe his art as pure, exquisite, fine art.
Yeah, there's no pretense, no gimmicks. It's just pure artistic expression.
I love that. And we actually have a quote from him about his artistic process.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he says, "My most compelling desire is to make my intentions clear, to express my innermost beliefs and feelings, and to expose the subjective part of me. It is a marriage of I and decision."
Wow, that's beautiful.
I know, right? It really sums up his whole approach.
Yeah, this idea of combining observation with personal expression.
Exactly. And he really believed in creating his art on location whenever possible.
Oh, yeah. He preferred to be out in the world experiencing things firsthand.
The gallery says he wanted to capture the air, the sun, people, humanity, nature.
Yeah, it's like he felt most connected to his art when he was surrounded by the things that inspired him.
Totally. And he saw his art as a direct interpretation of what he saw and felt.
So it's not just about what's happening outside, it's also about what's happening inside.
Right, it's this blend of observation and personal feeling.
Exactly.
And apparently he rarely made major changes to his work after he created it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially with watercolor, you have to be so decisive with that medium.
Yeah, there's no room for second guessing.
And it seems like he preferred that immediacy, that spontaneity.
But he did work in his studio sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially for still lifes and portraits.
That makes sense. Those require a different kind of focus.
Right.
And he loved painting flowers.
He did. He thought they were magical, yet so natural.
Yeah. They're such a perfect subject for him, you know?
Totally. So full of life and color.
And he also really enjoyed drawing the human figure.
Yeah, that's such a classic artistic subject.
It is, and it seems like his studio was this really special place for him.
Oh, yeah. It was his sanctuary filled with his art supplies, his finished pieces, his works in progress.
The gallery describes it as A secluded room with a simple easel panel, paint palettes, works completed, and those in progress.
Yeah, and he also had a ton of art books.
Of course.
But it wasn't always about solitude. He also liked working in the living room with Olga.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's like art was just a part of their life together.
And apparently she listened to classical music while he worked.
Yeah, but it seems like he could easily get into that creative state of mind even without music.
Like it was just always there.
Exactly. So he felt like he always had something inside him that needed to get out.
And his art was his way of expressing that. And Julius says that his dad believed everyone has a unique purpose given to them by the creator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that it's our job to figure out what that purpose is and express it.
That's a beautiful way to think about it.
It is, and I think Laz L'Attar really lived that philosophy.
Yeah, he definitely did.
So let's talk about Julius for a minute because he's played such a huge role in keeping his dad's legacy alive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's the one who created the online gallery and started test publishing.
Right, and he started working with his dad's art back in 1983.
He's been at it for a long time.
He has. And it's clear that he's really dedicated to preserving his dad's work and sharing it with the world.
Yeah, he's not just a curator, he's also a son who clearly loves and admires his father.
Yeah, and I think that comes through in everything he does.
Totally. And it's so cool that he's also an artist himself.
Yeah, he makes music under the name J-Tar.
And some people say his music actually has a similar style to his dad's art.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's like the creativity runs in the family.
It does. And Julius has also written those two books about his parents, Cherry Picked and The Moon and the Star.
Which we've been quoting from this whole time.
Exactly. And I think those books are so important because they give us this whole other layer of understanding about Laszlo Carr.
Right. They're not just about the art, they're about the man behind the art.
Exactly. And they're filled with these personal stories and details that you wouldn't find anywhere else.
They really help us connect with him on a deeper level.
Yeah, and I think that's Julius's goal, to help people see his dad as more than just an artist.
As a human being.
Yeah, with all those complexities and experiences.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some of the key takeaways you think our listeners should remember about Laszlo Tarr?
Well, I think the biggest one is his unwavering dedication to art.
Yeah, he was creating art for almost his entire life.
Exactly. And through so much upheaval, too.
I mean, think about it. He lived through a world war. He escaped a communist regime. He started a new life in a new country.
And through it all, he never stopped creating.
It's amazing.
It is, and I think his art reflects all of those experiences.
Yeah, his work is so diverse, so full of life and energy.
It's clear that he was deeply connected to the world around him and to his own inner world.
And he had this incredible talent for capturing those worlds through his art.
Yeah, he was a master of so many different mediums.
And he was always striving for that perfect expression.
Right, always pushing himself to explore new ways of creating.
So, for our listeners out there, hopefully this deep dive has given you a better understanding of who Laszlo Tarr was as both an artist and a person.
Yeah, we've seen his art, we've learned about his life, and we've heard his own words about his artistic philosophy.
And if there's one thing I hope you take away from this, it's the idea that art can be a source of strength and meaning no matter what life throws your way.
And that everyone has a unique story to tell.
Exactly. And maybe this deep dive has inspired you to think about your own story and how you might express it.
Maybe you'll pick up a paintbrush or a pencil, or maybe you'll find another way to share your innermost beliefs and feelings with the world.
Because everyone has something to contribute.
Absolutely.
So go out there and create.
Yeah, make your mark on the world.
And who knows, maybe someday we'll be doing a deep dive on your life and work.
That would be something.
It would so keep creating and keep inspiring.
And we'll see you next time on the Deep Dive.
Bye, everyone.